Okay, let's unpack this. You know that moment when you're navigating the maze of regulations, especially maybe in law school, and you stumble upon something local that makes you wonder, wait, can the city really do that? It feels like there's this ever-shifting boundary between what local authorities can control and where federal power steps in. Today, we're diving deep into a Supreme Court case that drew a really sharp line in exactly this kind of scenario.
Precisely. We're taking a close look at American Trucking Associations v. City of Los Angeles.
Think of it as a fascinating showdown between some very specific local environmental aims and the much broader reach of federal authority over interstate commerce.
Right.
We've gathered a wealth of information that really gets into the core of this, the on-the-ground facts, the legal strategies employed, and ultimately why this decision continues to be so relevant, particularly when we're discussing preemption and the constantly evolving landscape of government regulation. Exactly. Our mission today is to cut through the dense legal language and get right to the heart of what this case means for you. By the end of our discussion, you'll have a strong grasp of the Supreme Court's reasoning, the crucial legal principles that were at play, and why this case remains a key reference point for anyone grappling with regulatory law, especially where transportation and environmental policy intersect. We're aiming for a real understanding of federal preemption and this concept of the market participant doctrine in this specific context.
So let's maybe paint a picture of where this all unfolded. We're talking about the Port of Los Angeles. Now, for those who might not be intimately familiar, this isn't just a large port. It's the absolute giant, the busiest port in the entire United States.
Just imagine the sheer volume of goods flowing through there every single day. It's almost incomprehensible. Now, if we dial back to 2008, the city and the port were grappling with some significant environmental challenges, alongside concerns from the local community that arose with all that port expansion, more ships, more trucks, and consequently, more pollution.
Yeah, exactly. And their answer to these challenges was the 2008 Clean Truck Program. It was a direct attempt to tackle those environmental and community worries head-on. To make this program operational, they established a system where trucking companies essentially had to agree to certain conditions if they wanted the privilege of operating at the port. These conditions were formally integrated into what they termed concession agreements.
Okay, so let's get down to the specifics. What exactly did these agreements mandate? What were the concrete requirements that these trucking companies had to meet?
Well, a couple of key requirements really capture the Supreme Court's attention. First, they were obligated to display placards on their trucks that prominently featured a "How am I driving?" phone number.
Oh, okay, like a feedback thing.
Kind of, yeah.
Right.
Think of it as a direct feedback mechanism for the public to report any issues they might observe. Second, they were required to submit a detailed plan outlining their arrangements for off-street parking for their trucks.
Interesting. So a two-pronged approach addressing both immediate operational behavior and the longer-term issue of parking congestion. But these weren't the only stipulations within these agreements, were they?
That's correct. The Clean Truck Program was quite comprehensive in its scope. It also encompassed requirements related to the financial stability of the trucking companies, standards for the proper maintenance of their vehicles, and even certain labor standards for their drivers. However, for our deep dive today, we're really going to focus our attention on those placard and parking rules. The Supreme Court's ultimate decision hinged significantly on these particular aspects.
Got it. So these requirements were embedded in the concession agreements, but how did the port actually, ensure compliance? What mechanisms did they have in place to make sure trucking companies followed these rules?
Yeah, this is a really critical juncture in the story. The port didn't solely rely on the contractual nature of these agreements. Crucially, they amended their tariff, which in this context isn't just a schedule of fees. It acts like a local law, a set of rules and regulations governing the use of the port with the full force of a city ordinance
Oh,
to
that's.
link adherence to these concession agreement requirements to potential criminal penalties.
Wow.
We're talking about violations being classified as misdemeanors, carrying potential fines, or even imprisonment. So this wasn't just a matter of breaching a contract. It had the weight and coercive power of the criminal justice system behind it.
Wow. Right. That's a significant escalation from a simple contract dispute. It's probably not surprising that this approach didn't sit well with the trucking industry, right? That brings us to the American Trucking Associations, or ATA.
Precisely. The ATA, representing a wide spectrum of trucking companies, stepped in and initiated legal action. Their central argument was that these requirements imposed by the port, particularly the placard and parking rules, were preempted by a federal statute known as the Federal Aviation Administration Authorization Act of 1994, often referred to as the FAAAA.
Okay, so here's the core legal puzzle that the Supreme Court had to unravel. Did this federal law, the FAAAA, actually prevent the Port of LA from enforcing these placard and parking rules? And a closely related question, as we touched on earlier, was whether the port was acting in its role as a regulator, essentially creating and enforcing laws, or more in the capacity of a business, simply setting the terms for using its facilities.
Let's delve into that FAAAA preemption aspect.
Yeah.
Section 1501 of this federal law is absolutely key. In essence, it states that state and local laws related to a motor carrier's price, route, or service are preempted, meaning the federal law takes precedence if those state or local laws possess the force and effect of law. That final phrase, force and effect of law, is really the trigger that sets preemption in motion.
So the ATA's argument was that these port requirements were undeniably related to the service provided by motor carriers, and because they were backed by the potential for criminal penalties, they clearly possessed the force and effect of law. But what was the port's counterargument? How did they attempt to argue that the FAAAA didn't apply in this situation?
Well, the port's primary defense was that they weren't acting. Oh, they argued they weren't acting in a regulatory capacity here. They asserted that they were simply operating as a landlord, establishing the terms and conditions for companies wishing to conduct business on their property.
Like a mall owner setting rules for stores.
Kind of, yeah. In their view, this was no different from any private business setting rules for its customers.
Okay, so we have the classic legal distinction, government acting as a sovereign entity versus government acting as a market participant. So what was the Supreme Court's ultimate conclusion? Did they side with the trucking industry or with the Port of LA?
The court reached a unanimous decision. They sided with the American Trucking Associations, declaring that the port's placard and parking rules were indeed preempted by the FAAA.
And that landmark opinion was authored by Justice Kagan, correct? So what was the crux of her reasoning? Why did the court determine that these rules overstepped the legal boundary?
Justice Kagan's majority opinion really emphasized the significance of the criminal penalties. Her fundamental reasoning, basically, was that the authority to impose criminal sanctions is a defining characteristic of governmental regulation, not private contractual arrangements.
Right.
Private entities simply do not possess the power to fine or imprison individuals for violating their terms.
That makes perfect sense. It's a pretty fundamental distinction in our legal system, isn't it?
Absolutely. And Justice Kagan specifically highlighted the fact that the port chose to utilize its tariff, which, as we've noted, functions as a local ordinance, a form of local law, to enforce these concession agreement requirements.
Mm-hmm.
By compelling terminal operators, and consequently the trucking companies they engaged, to comply under the threat of criminal punishment, the port was unequivocally acting with the force of law. As she articulated it quite directly, the port exercised classic regulatory authority, complete with the use of criminal penalties, in imposing the placard and parking requirements at issue here.
So it was the method of enforcement that proved to be the decisive factor here. It wasn't necessarily about the underlying goal of achieving cleaner air or better parking management.
Precisely. The court underscored that by essentially mandating compliance through the coercive threat of criminal penalties, the port firmly positioned itself within the realm of regulation. Just as Kagan even stated, the port made its regulation of drayage trucks mandatory by imposing criminal penalties on the entities hiring all such trucks in the facility. Slice it or dice it any which way, the port thus acted with the force of law.
Wow.
It was a very clear and unambiguous statement from the court.
And what about the port's argument that they were merely acting as a market participant? The court didn't accept that argument either, did they?
No, they did not. The court systematically rejected the application of the market participant doctrine in this particular context. Their reasoning was quite straightforward. When a government acts as a genuine market participant, it engages in negotiation and voluntary agreements, much like any private business.
Right. They negotiate. They don't just command.
Exactly. They don't typically resort to threatening individuals with jail time for noncompliance with their terms. The port's decision to employ criminal sanctions to enforce its requirements was a clear indicator that it was operating as a regulator, not simply as a property owner managing its facilities.
Makes sense.
Justice Kagan was quite direct on this point, stating, "Only if it foregoes the distinctively governmental exercise of legal authority may it escape Section 14501's preemptive scope."
So the power to punish through criminal penalties is a uniquely governmental tool that inherently takes you outside the realm of being just a market participant.
Exactly. Now, it's worth mentioning that Justice Thomas, while agreeing with the majority's ultimate conclusion, raised a slightly different, more constitutional concern in his concurring opinion.
Oh, that's interesting. What was his specific point?
Justice Thomas expressed some reservations regarding the potential overreach of the FAAAA itself, specifically questioning whether Congress has the constitutional authority under the Commerce Clause to preempt even purely intrastate trucking regulations. He concurred that the port's actions in this specific case were preempted because they carried the force of law, he flagged this broader constitutional question about the limits of federal preemption under the FAAA as something that might warrant further consideration in future cases.
But it wasn't decided here.
No, because the port didn't actually raise this constitutional challenge in its legal arguments before the court. The majority opinion didn't directly address it. It's more of a potential avenue for future legal debate.
So a seed has been planted for potential future legal challenges. Now, if we zoom out a bit, what are the really crucial takeaways from this case? What are the practical implications, especially for local governments and for those of us studying law trying to understand this area?
The primary takeaway really centers on the method of enforcement. If a local rule impacting motor carriers, whether it concerns placards, parking, or other aspects of their operations, is enforced through the coercive power of the government, particularly through criminal penalties or similarly forceful tactics, it is highly likely to be preempted by the FAAA.
Okay.
Localities cannot simply characterize something as a business decision if they're utilizing the power of the criminal justice system to ensure compliance. As the court explicitly stated, the port's intentions are not what matters. That is because, as we just described, the port chose a tool to fulfill those goals which only a government can wield, the hammer of the criminal law.
Right. So for you listening, federal preemption isn't just about what you're regulating, but critically how you're enforcing it. If you're reaching for the state's coercive powers in areas Congress has touched, expect federal law to likely step in.
Exactly. And to briefly touch on the underlying basis for preemption, it's rooted in the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, which, you know, establishes federal law as the supreme law of the land. When thinking about the market participant doctrine, it's helpful to contrast it with governmental action. A private business sets terms that customers can voluntarily agree to. The government, however, often uses its coercive powers to mandate behavior.
So this ruling really puts a constraint on how local governments, particularly port authorities in this kind of situation, can pursue their environmental or other policy objectives when they're dealing with industries that are already heavily regulated at the federal level.
Precisely. It suggests that if local entities want to achieve similar policy goals, for instance, cleaner air or reduce traffic congestion in federally regulated sectors like interstate trucking, they might need to explore alternative strategies.
Like what?
Think about using incentives, establishing voluntary programs, or perhaps even collaborating directly with federal agencies rather than relying on the threat of criminal penalties to enforce their own distinct requirements.
So while this case focused on trucking, could we see similar preemption challenges in other areas where local governments try to regulate industries with a federal presence, like perhaps ride sharing or even certain environmental regulations beyond transportation?
That's a great question. It seems plausible that we could see similar challenges arise in other federally regulated industries if local governments attempt to use their coercive powers, like criminal penalties, to enforce their own rules that relate to the service, price, or routes of those industries.
Right. The principle seems broadly applicable.
Indeed. The key principle here, the focus on the method of enforcement, is likely to have broader implications beyond just the trucking industry.
So this case really underscores the dominance of federal law in regulating interstate commerce and highlights that crucial distinction between the government acting as a proprietor and the government acting as a regulator, especially when those actions carry the potential for criminal sanctions.
Absolutely. It's a pivotal case for understanding the delicate balance between the desire for local autonomy and the necessity of a consistent federal framework when it comes to regulating interstate commerce.
So to bring it all together, the American Trucking Association's case really boils down to this fundamental idea. When a government, even with the best intentions, uses the coercive power of the law, and particularly the criminal law, to enforce rules on federally regulated industries, it's acting as a regulator, not just a market participant.
Right.
And within the realm of interstate trucking, that kind of regulation is likely to be preempted by federal law. The manner in which you enforce a rule is just as critical, if not more so, than the underlying policy goal you're trying to achieve. We understand the why behind the Clean Truck Program. We've now delved into what the specific requirements placed on trucking companies.
Exactly. And for you listening, consider how this principle might manifest in other areas where federal and local regulations intersect. Where else might you see this tension between permissible local action and impermissible overreach, especially when the enforcement mechanisms involve criminal penalties? It really compels you to think critically about the division of power and the balance between local needs and the broader framework of federal authority in regulating commerce.
And that leads us to a final thought for you to mull over. Given these limitations imposed by federal preemption, what innovative, non-coercive approaches can local governments and ports develop to effectively pursue their environmental and community goals when they're dealing with industries that fall under federal regulatory umbrellas?
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge that demands creative thinking and a deep understanding of these established legal boundaries.
Definitely a crucial question to consider as you navigate the complexities of regulatory law. Thanks for exploring this deep dive with us today.
Until our next deep dive.